I don't know how to act my age. I've never been this old before. As if there's some sort of manual that should tell us, okay, at such and such age you should act like this, and such age you should act like this. Obviously, parents have expectations at such and such age you should be able to act your age. I get that. But this actually T-shirt actually came as a, well, I don't know what the background of the T-shirt itself, but this, I had seen it before online, and it will actually tie in to some degree, a small part, later in the lesson. But I wanted to lead with it as well, because there's, well, you'll see in a little bit. I wanted to begin to continue my series on the power of faith. Now, I know that's kind of new news to you because you didn't know I was preaching a series on the power of faith. And I didn't know I was preaching a series on the power of faith. But it appears that I am, and so we will continue. I realize it might be a little bit small to read on the left-hand side, but that's from Romans chapter 4, verses 20 and 21, which I used in my last lesson, and which was the main thrust of my last lesson, and that is that no belief made him, and that was in regards to Abraham, waver concerning the promise of God, and that was particularly in regards to his son and all the promises, but particularly regard to his son. But he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. And obviously that was the point of the lesson was last time was, you know, really at the end of the day, are we fully convinced that God is able to do what he has promised? After all, as I mentioned to you, our greatest need was solved not by increased bank accounts and title and stature and clothes and fame, but our greatest need was resolved by a cross and an empty tomb. Our greatest need is a relationship with God. Our greatest need is to be in heaven. As Vance rightly stated this morning in Bible class, there's only two choices at the end. There really is. And you know, we don't like that. We don't like two choices. I go to the grocery store. I don't want two choices. I want four or five, six choices. No. Man says, no. Only two choices. And he got that from what? God. God said it in the book. There's only two choices. And so the question is are we fully convinced that God is able to do what he had promised? Well, let's build our faith. And hopefully I can help you in a way this morning. Now, I do want to turn over to Joshua chapter 1 for our class teachers. Do not panic. I realize there is a class lesson coming up on Joshua. Don't worry, I'm not going the same direction you went. I might touch on one small thing, but it's by no means the same direction as you're going in your class. But I do want to turn over to the book of Joshua. Joshua is, of course, is talking about and is a book about the conquest of the land. But I want to kind of back up a little bit, as I am apt to do, and that is to give you context. To give you, in this case, I want to back up and give you some history as to how Israel, this great nation, has arrived to this point on the east side of the Jordan River. Now, I don't have any maps or anything like that, but I got a little flow chart for you. So we're going to use a flow chart this morning. A bit of one of them that I use at work from time to time. So we're going to kind of go backwards a little bit. We'll go all the way back to the book of Genesis. Now, I could have went back to Abraham, but that was going to be too far. So let's just go with Jacob. Jacob and his sons moved to Egypt. Now, we had a great lesson not too long ago about Joseph and how he is a Jesus and Joseph and the similarities between those two events, the Joseph life and that of Jesus. But Joseph, of course, is in Egypt, becomes second in command, interprets the dreams, is elevated, and ultimately has the opportunity to bring his family down to Egypt to be, you know, saved from the famine. And so Jacob and his sons move to Egypt. They go down there about 70, 75 in all. Depends on if you're looking at the Old Testament or the New Testament. Point being is they move down there and they stay there. They stay there for so long and they begin to multiply and grow and grow and grow and grow real, real fast that eventually another king or another pharaoh arises and places the Israelites in bondage. And to Vance, as he was talking about this morning, you're in bondage, you're not going anywhere. They just couldn't get up and leave. That opportunity had long gone away, and there's for obvious reasons. So the Egyptians place them in bondage. They're in bitter bondage for a long time. Moses arises, eventually leads them out of Egypt. God sends the plagues, and Pharaoh finally relents. He lets the people go, and of course they cross over the Red Sea, and they get down to Mount Sinai, and there Israel meets Jehovah God at Mount Sinai. So by the time that progresses, within a few months, they're there. But then ultimately, within a couple of years, it's time for them to actually go into the land of Canaan. So Israel they send the spies out, they go out in the land, they are gone for 40 days. They come back from being out in the wilderness, in the land, they're spying it out, they come back. And, of course, the 10 spies says, no, we can't take it. It's a great land. It's a beautiful land. It's a wonderful land. But the giants are there, you know. Well, maybe the Jets are there, too. The giants are there. And we can't take this land. There's no way that we can take this land. So Israel disobeys, doesn't believe, okay? You look at the book of Hebrews, disobedience and not believing are one and the same. But that, you can go look at Hebrews 3 and Hebrews chapter 4. So they end up staying in the wilderness 1 year for every day they're gone. They were gone for 40 days. They stay for 40 years. God actually, if he was a lenient judge, gave them 2 years credit if he actually followed the timeline. So that generation dies that came out of Egypt during the 40 years. They wander. And that's what, you know, really what's happening in the book of Numbers. Even though it doesn't spell out everywhere they went and everything that they did, but they had to spend 38 years more in this desert area. So I was thinking desert of sorrow and sin. I mean, how fitting just the line applies. That's where they were. They were in this desert because of their sin. And you stop and think about it, that's not where they're supposed to have been. By that time, they're supposed to be in Canaan, but they weren't. So eventually comes time, as Ken has already read Joshua 1, Moses dies. Joshua in Deuteronomy 31, again also in Joshua 1, basically, is commissioned to lead Israel into the land of Canaan. You can read that in Deuteronomy 31, obviously what we're reading here in the book of Judges. And then finally, and to some sadness, you know, Moses views the land from Pisgah. He goes up on Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, and there he's able to view the land. Deuteronomy 34 teaches us that, and then ultimately Moses dies. All right, everybody with me so far? Pretty good. We'll get to a certain... All right, so that gets us here. The power of faith. I'm going to talk about crossing the Jordan. That's the lesson this morning. Ken read for us the first 9 verses. He had asked what I wanted to read, and I asked him to read that. I want you to follow with me just a little bit, if you don't mind. In Joshua 1 and verse 2, after 30 days of mourning for the death of Moses, Moses had died. Verse 1, verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I'm giving them to the people of Israel. Drop down to verse 6. Of course, he says, be strong and courageous, for ye shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. If you turn back in your Bibles to Deuteronomy 34, the last chapter in Deuteronomy, and you look at verse 4, and the text tells us here, didn't realize it was so small on the screen. And the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I will let you see it with your eyes, but you should not go over there. So Moses wasn't able to go. But the focus is that this is the land. They're on the east side of the Jordan River. They've been in bondage. the nation has been in bondage. That generation has died out. This generation is sitting over on the east side of Jordan River. There's land over here that was promised to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. These were monumental promises. One was that they were to become a nation, and they are. They're a nation now. But they have no land. And God had told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they will get this land. In fact, Joshua 1 defines the boundaries. North and south, east and west, the boundaries are defined. This is going to be their land. And from our previous reading and knowledge from the book of Numbers, 38 years ago, when they went into the land, the spies, it's a land of, it was beautiful land. It's a bountiful land. And they talked about the cluster of grapes, how them being carried on a long staff or and carried by two that they brought back. And they talked about the goodness of the land. This was the promised land. This is where they were supposed to be going. But here they're on the wrong side of the river. And here's the thing about it. They couldn't stay there. It wasn't okay just to stay on the wrong side of the river. Now, they had already destroyed a couple of the kings on that side of the river. And in fact, if I remember correctly, Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh is then going to end up with parts of the land on the east side of the river because there was an abundance of them and they had secured those kingdoms and taken it. And Moses said, okay, well, God, but Moses said, okay, well, you can have that side, but make certain you go and fight. That's another part of Joshua, the end of chapter 1, if you want to read there. So they're going to go in and fight as well, but it wasn't okay just to stay on this side of the river. They had to move. They had to do something. They had to cross the Jordan. And when you look at these verses that Ken has read for us in verse 6 and verse 9, verse 7 and verse 9, I know you picked up on them. The words repeated over and over again, be strong and courageous. Verse 7, only be strong and very courageous. I like that. You know, be strong, be courageous, be very courageous. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? That was a direct command. Okay, it didn't make the top 10 in the book of Exodus, but it was a direct command to Joshua. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Joshua, you've got a task to do. You've got to take these people from the wrong side of the river, and you've got to cross the Jordan, and you've got to get over here into this land. When you get in land, you got some things to do too. But God's telling him, be strong and courageous. If you hadn't even back up to Deuteronomy chapter 31, when Joshua's commissioned, God tells Moses tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. Do you think there's a reason why Joshua keeps getting told to be stronger? I think there is. It's called encouragement. It's called motivation. It's called that what you're about to enter and what you're about to do is not going to be easy. This is not just taking a stroll through the park and getting rid of a few ants and a few bugs here and there. You're about to go into a land and you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to fight people. Now, modern day warfare is called airplanes and rocket artillery. It does amazing things. It eliminates the possibility of manpower loss, okay, and brings severe destruction. Back then, they didn't have rocket artillery. You know what they had? They had a sword. They had a spear. Eventually, they had a bow. What that means? That means hand-to-hand combat. That's not easy. Be strong and courageous. No wonder it's the Apostle Paul who talks over in the book of Ephesians, in Ephesians 6, and describes our battles as this spiritual battle in the heavenly places and arms us with this armory that he presents to us as that of a Roman soldier and the helmet, the breastplate, and all these different pieces to get us ready because we're in a fight, we're in a battle. But did you notice amidst all those verses there, especially the latter part of verse 7 and verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. Notice how important it was for Joshua to pay close attention to the book, to read the book, to follow the book. And yes, back then the book as we would know to have it would have been what we would call Genesis through Deuteronomy. But the point is that that's what he had, and that's what he was supposed to read. That's what he was supposed to pay close attention to. And I think there's a reason for that. We'll talk about it. So, Joshua's commissioned. Joshua's told. It's time for Joshua to do something. So Joshua commanded the officers of the people. So, just like a good general, pass along the commands. I know what I need to do. This is what we got to do. I command the officers of the people. Pass through the midst of the camp. Command the people. Prepare your provisions, for within 3 days you are to pass over this Jordan to go into the possession of the land that the Lord your God has given you to possess. So now, Joshua says, okay, we're going. I've been told we need to go. I've been encouraged we need to go. We're going to move. But this is a massive amount of people. As we talked about the Passover, they were told, 4 days? Pick the Passover lamb out 4 days. Pretty long warning, if you would, to sacrifice the Passover lamb and get ready to go. Here, there's a 3 days. In 3 days, you're going to pass over. You get ready. We're going to move. And we're going to pass over this Jordan. Well, here's the problem. You see, they had to pass over the Jordan. That was the problem. Now, the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of the harvest. I jumped ahead over to Joshua chapter 3 and verse 15. But here's the point. You see, I don't know if you see it very well. I don't think that's the Jordan River, by the way. But that's the best image I got when I did a little Google search. I had too many images of a smooth lake and a smooth river. In the ocean. It's like people not paying attention. This was a river, not an ocean. But anyways, beachside. It's not a beach. You ever been near a river when it's kind of really violent? I love whitewater rafting. I even got my mother-in-law to go whitewater rafting. And I'm telling you, that day it was more violent that day we went than we went when we went. And it flows. And here there's a small statement, parenthetical statement that's made. Now the Jordan overflows its banks throughout the time of the harvest. This was not the lazy river. Okay? This was not something like, hey, that's pretty simple right there. This was the Jordan. And we just got told that in 3 days we're going to cross this Jordan River. Well, I don't see a bridge. I don't see the Army Corps of Engineers coming. How are we going to cross this? Now, we're going to get to that in a minute. But he just told the people we're going to cross the river. You know what they had to have? They had to have faith that something was going to happen that's going to help them cross the river. Were they going to just get picked up and floated over and dropped off? Don't know. Don't know what they were thinking, but they knew they had to cross the river. So, let's jump over to Joshua chapter 3. Let's see where I'm at in my notes. Make certain I don't miss anything important. Nope, we're good so far. Jump over to Joshua chapter 3. We're going to pick up with verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim, where they were. And they came to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. And at the end of the 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord carried by the Levitical priest, then you shall set out from the place and follow it. Now, first of all, have you happened to notice that the Old Testament characters always got up early in the morning, did something? Now, I don't know, that's not part of my lesson, but it's so fascinating. They got up early. It's like, okay, they're ready to go. They get at it. Anyway, so they get up early. And they move from Shittim. They get close to the Jordan River, so they're real close to it. And they lodge there. So they're like right there at the cusp. They're looking at this Jordan River. Of course, the people from Jericho are looking at the Jordan River too and seeing this mass of people. But that's another lesson another time. But I want you to notice particularly verse 4. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it. What's the it there? It's the Ark of the Covenant. Remember, he said in verse 3, command the people as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the Levitical priests. What's happening? The Levitical priests that are assigned to carry the Ark of the Covenant, they're going to go before the people. When you see the Ark moving, it's time for you to move. Why wasn't it Joshua? Why wasn't it when you see Joshua walking towards the Jordan River, you need to get up and follow him? Why was it the priest? What did the Ark of the Covenant symbolize? God's presence. Who was leading the people? God. Not Joshua. You shall be at a distance between you and it about 2,000 cubits in length. That's a pretty hefty length that you're staying behind it. Do not come near it in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. There's my t-shirt. Don't know how to act my age. I've never been this old before. You have not passed this way before. This is their first time there. Now, maybe in their journeys in the wilderness, they may have backtracked and went here and there, and it's kind of hard to kind of keep up with exactly where they land. I kind of need a map more for that, and even that might be sometimes best guess where they're at. But he clearly says here, you've not passed this way before. You're at a spot in your life that you've never been before. But who's out in front? God is leading the way. And Joshua said, this is like one of those favorite verses of mine. Joshua said unto the people, sanctify yourselves. There's importance to that. For tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Can you imagine what it was to try to sleep that night? I don't know if they went to sleep or not. I have no clue. But I just got told that God is going to do wonders among us tomorrow. I think I've been so excited I probably would never have slept. What is this that God's about to do? He said we got to cross this Jordan. I have no idea other than the fact that when you see the ark moving, I got to move. That's all I know right now. Do you remember seeing the plagues against Egypt? Now, granted, some were under the age of war, so those were not the ones who died. And it was the adults, if you would, that died. How much they remembered, well, you know, that's unknown. But I want you to think about this generation. The plagues against Egypt, maybe some of them were just too small or not even born. You remember the plundering of the Egyptians? Do you remember the crossing of the Red Sea? And how Moses stretched out his arms and the sea split and the Egyptians were stopped and we crossed over on dry ground? Do you remember seeing that? Do you remember seeing how Pharaoh sent his army down into the Red Sea and how God closed the waters up and destroyed the Egyptians? Do you remember meeting God at Mount Sinai? Now, when I read that, I'm a little bit nervous. Because when you talk about the thunders and lightning and the earth shaking and mountain quaking, and you know, that's an imagery that's unbelievable. Do you remember the fact that 12 spies went out into the land and came back and said, "Listen, it's a great land. We need to go and we need to take it." No. I would dare say that most of the people don't remember. They may not have been old enough to remember, or old enough to understand what those events were. But now this generation is about to experience something that they have not seen. God is about to work wonders among you. And how many of them had seen God act? We do know of two, Joshua and Caleb. But how many of them have seen God act? Pick up with Joshua chapter 3 and verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped in the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of the harvest, the waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a very heap far away. I used to think that it happened right there, but it says it was far away at this place called Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan, and those flowing down towards the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. This water stoppage happened way up there, somewhere else. You're carrying the ark. You're a priest. And you got this ark. I don't know how they came on their shoulders. Carrying the ark. This river is flowing. Okay? You have to wonder what was going through their mind the closer they got to that Jordan. Step by step by step, they were getting closer to it. And you know what? Nothing's happened. Nothing has happened. We got to cross over this river and nothing's happened. Surely as soon as we get right there and then, no. The text tells us they all got in the river. When the priests, when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water, and that means those in front and those in back were in the river. It's at that moment that God acted. And the people saw. Now, I think I would want to be one of those Levitical priests that day. Because I got to be the first to go into the river. I got to be the first to have faith enough that whatever God said he's going to do, and he's going to work wonders, because Joshua's told me he's going to work wonders. I'm waiting for the wonder to happen. And I hit there, and the last guy behind me sometime hits the water as well. And all of a sudden, the water stops. A very great heat, massive amount of water, just comes out of standstill. Now, I wonder what the people at Adam thought. Like, what's going on? But they didn't, maybe they didn't know about, you know, these people way down here, but something's happened. That's where I wanted to bring this up. Yeah. Oh, I missed a point. That's all right. And the people passed over the opposite of Jericho. If you back up to Joshua chapter 2, obviously it's the account of Rahab hiding the spies. But there's an interesting thing that Rahab says there in Joshua 2 and verse 9. And I know the Lord has given you the land that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and all the inhabitants of the land melt before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before when you came out of Egypt. When did that happen? She says, we have heard. It was 40 years ago. I don't know how old Rahab is by any means, but we have heard. The people know the Lord, your God, dried up the Red Sea. And she says, we know you're coming. God acted when the priests got in the water. And can you imagine walking across that dry land? Now, in this case, they don't have Egyptians chasing them. But they're walking across that dry land, that river, and they get to the other side. Somewhere in there, it just made me think about Romans 4 and verse 21. Fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. And here, Joshua, the priest, the people are fulfilling that. Fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. Application. Got to have application, right? Faith building. Three quick things. Looking back into the Old Testament, Abraham and Isaac, as I've done in these two lessons. The demonstration of faith in God, even when all else looks like you should just give up. Abraham, 25 years ago, and I'm pretty old. And Sarah, she has no chance of having a baby. 25 years. But he didn't give up. Joshua, being told, go across that river, and he doesn't even see what happens until the Ark of the Covenant, the priest carrying it, feet's in the water. When you got that river flowing and you got to go and you got to go take this land, but the first thing you got to do is cross the river. And oh, by the way, Moses is dead. It's all on you, Joshua. Wow. Second thing, the word of God matters. Why do you think he was supposed to keep the book of the law and read it, meditate on it? Because it matters. In John 20, verses 30 and 31, John wrote, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and by believing you may have life in his name. We're, of course, talking about eternity here. Talking about eternal life. And John says that these miracles, these wondrous, these great, these substantial miracles, these are written down for you so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies. And he has brought salvation. And oh, by the way, John only records seven miracles. Only records seven miracles. But we read it. Because it strengthens our faith. Because see, we haven't seen, if you would, the Red Sea part. And a Jordan River stand up. But we believe. We believe that God has done these things. We believe that Jesus died on the cross to give us salvation. We believe in the empty tomb because we believe that Jesus is coming back. And we're going to be with him for eternity. And the dead in Christ will rise. And then lastly, experiencing things now that I never did. In Joshua 3 and verse 4, for you have not passed this way before. You know, we are all experiencing things, one, we never thought we'd ever experience in our lives. How many of us have said at times, boy, I wish I was a kid again. So mom and daddy would make the decisions. Life was so good. Oh, I had to go to school. I get it. But man, life was good. But we're all in our lives this very day experiencing things that we've never done before. And how do we get through it? How do we get through it? How do we deal with it? Our faith looks beyond. No wonder Paul wrote in the context of persecutions and sufferings, but he wrote in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen, For the things that are seen are transient. We look around, it just passes away, it fades away, it goes away, it falls down, it gets destroyed. But the things that are unseen are eternal. We got a heaven-bound faith, and we trust in God. Fully convinced that God is able to do all that He has promised. Thank you for your attention.